Our speaker tonight, and I'm looking forward to hearing her from Tennessee, is Sandy F. Sandy F., it's all yours.
Okay, thank you very much, Joey. I appreciate it. I appreciate being asked to share at a new meeting, too. You know, I came into this program 30 years ago, and if you had told me that tonight I'd be speaking in front of, I don't know how many people are here, say 40 or 50 people, and you know, I'd see your faces all on screen, I would have said you're absolutely crazy. I was a scared little girl, and I never went in front of anyone to do anything. I would have passed out, or worse would have happened, let's just say. But today, because of this program, I can be here before you, because I do have recovery. I have experience, strength, and hope as a result of working this program. My name is Sandy. I am a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater. I've been in the program for 30 years and grown greatly over that time. I have not been abstinent the entire time. Something I heard early on was, it's a program of honesty. And I always thought I was a very honest person before this program. But just like many other things in the program, there seem to be layers to it for me, just like an onion skin. So many layers that get peeled away. And I think if the God of my understanding had shown me that in my first meeting, I would have just dropped dead. I couldn't have lived with myself, because I thought I was just so perfect, you know. What really needed to change in me? Not much. It needed to change in someone else. Joe, before I keep going, am I able to show a picture or not?
Yes, we'll I will allow, Beth will allow you to share the screen.
Okay, I'll just share one. Some people like to see a before and after, and I only found one. I really didn't allow myself to get my picture taken too often. So let me see if I can share a picture. But, and then also, are we able to mention specific foods or not?
Yes, you can mention any food you'd like.
Okay, let me see if I can get this picture up here. Oh, one momento. I'm not the greatest technical person, but let's see if you can see that. Are you seeing that picture or not?
Nope, not yet. Okay. Hit the green share screen.
Yes, the problem. Let me turn this bigger. There we go. Ta-da. Now, can you see it?
Yes,
there we go. That was me. I came into program at 188 pounds, and today I'm down 60 pounds from that and maintaining. So anyway, just to give you a picture of where I used to be. All right, there we go. And I'm so sorry. Did you say yes, I can say specific foods? Okay. All right. Just want to make sure. And the other thing I should say is, you know, I speak for myself, my experience, strength, and hope. I definitely don't speak for OA as a whole. You know, there's just so much to say, having been in this program for 30 years. I'll tell you a little bit about my history, though, just so you have a little background. I was born in 1957. So do the math, 66 years old, 66 and a half. To a policeman, and my mom was a stay-at-home mom. I was a firstborn of four, so raised in the Midwest. From an early age, I can remember just craving sugary items. I mean, in the form of baked goods and candy, mostly. Ice cream was a huge thing for me. We didn't get it often, but when we got it, I just remember, like, oh, being just thrilled. There were certain things that happened that, as I looked back on them when I was in OA, I realized that I had an issue with sugar. Now, this is very small, but it's very big, because I was only 7 or 8 years old, little store down the street from us, and it had a penny gumball machine, all different colors of gumballs. You put your penny in, you get a gumball out. If you were fortunate enough to get the yellow gumball that was all spotted with different colors, you got to get the large size candy bar, the one of your choice. I used my pennies for I don't know how long and never got a darn spotted yellow gumball. But I got a yellow gumball, so I thought I could take that home and use my crayons and put different spots on it and take it back. And so I did. And the lady said, "Did you get this from the gumball machine?" I said, "Mm-hmm." She said, "Okay, go pick out your candy bar." Well, I felt sick to my stomach when I went home. We were always taught to be honest and everything. And so I told my mom I had to go back and give the lady a nickel for the candy bar back in the day. But, you know, I was 7 or 8 years old and I wanted that candy bar so bad that I would fake a gumball to get it. Small thing, but big thing. The other thing, some other things when I was younger, my grandmother, we'd go to visit her once a year, and she was a baker, so she'd bake these certain kind of cookies for us, and then she had a certain kind of cookie that she hid for herself in the pantry. But man, I was stealth. I could just get in and out of that pantry so quick, and I found where she kept all of her sweets, and I was constantly, nobody else did this, but I was constantly going in and eating, you know, all those. Other thing was like at Halloween, I was the oldest in my family. So I'd make everybody dump their bags out when they got in and I would set up the trading, you know, to my benefit. Of course, I got the things that I wanted and they got the junk candy after that. When I was in my 20s, I was working at a bank as a bank manager, and the bank departments would have different contests. And you had to create your own contest. Well, of course, I came up with a food eating contest. How many tacos can a hungry group of blah, blah, blah eat? And I did this whole promotional thing. I got this restaurant to sponsor us. I did this promotion. The bank president showed up and he said, "Sandy, this is really, you did a great job and everything, but I don't see the bank's name on anything." I didn't give a care about the bank. I wanted to eat all those tacos. I wanted to have a reason to be able to eat as many tacos as I could in this amount of time. I mean, you know what? And I had no idea why. No idea. More of a kind of a very sad thing happened when I was in Germany. When I was 17, I was an exchange student and a younger girl. It was her 16th birthday. She was there. We were out at the Hofbräuhaus in Munich. And, you know, I think I may have had a beer or less. I wasn't a drinker at all in high school or that. But she drank a little bit much. And my mom had told me, "Don't you ever go off with any, you know, young man when you're over there by yourself. Stay with others." So I did. But she went off with someone and came back. And, you know, the worst case scenario had happened to her. And I tell you, I was just so, I know I felt horrible, horrible for her. And I didn't know how to handle it. I did not know how to handle it. I had no tools at that time. And so somebody challenged me to eat 12 bowls of ice cream, 36 scoops of ice cream, and he would pay for it. I ate it. He didn't pay for it. I almost died. I mean, I only share that because I had no tools of coping, spiritual, emotional, physical. I was raised in a home where one was Catholic, one was Protestant, so we didn't go to church. I didn't really know about God. My mom was my God. And so whatever she said, I followed. I did what she said. And which was great as long as I was in her presence. But when I was on the other side of the world, it was really difficult to know what to do. Emotionally, that was a very difficult thing. And I carried that with me for many, 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 many years. Connecting food also to love. For me, my dad was a police officer, very quiet, soft-spoken man. I respected him deeply and I loved him deeply, but never any like physical touch or words of affirmation or anything like that. And so I would just follow him around like a puppy when he was at home. And in the morning, I'd go sit by him at breakfast, whatever he ate, I ate. Lunchtime, if he came home, same thing. I would eat whatever he ate. And every night before he went to bed, he had a scoop of vanilla ice cream, Hershey's chocolate and Spanish peanuts. So I did the same thing. And I believe that's when, you know, I was seeking love so much. I wanted that connection. And so, not realizing it, the food then became the connection with my dad. I associated that with love, with my dad. So the other thing I would do in high school is, the whole pizza night on Friday nights. I really didn't care for sports. I didn't care about the football games, the basketball games. I was just focused on where are we going afterwards for pizza. I mean, that was my, and I always remember that. Everybody be talking about the game. Oh, we're winning, we're losing, whatnot. And I could have cared less. I keep looking at my watch, what quarter or what, you know, where are we at? When are we going to be leaving? My husband and I got married in 79. And I still didn't have a concept of God other than my mother, but I, you know, moved away from home, married my husband. We moved a short distance away, had our first child. And then we moved to Chicago from Michigan. That was a big distance to be away from my mom. And that's when I had my first spiritual awakening. I tell you, I don't know, it was like scales fell from my eyes and I developed an understanding of God that I'd never had before. And my whole world just opened up. I decided I wasn't going to just have one child. I was going to be a mom and stay home and raise these kids. And so one child, two, and then the third came along and I struggled with postpartum depression with her. And I started eating more and more. And that's when I got up to the 188 pounds. And I had no idea what was going on with me. I didn't know about being a compulsive overeater. And so my husband lost his job the day our third daughter was born. And a good friend of mine during that year said, you know, I know you're really depressed and you can't afford counseling or anything, but I go to this meeting and it's called Al-Anon. I think you could come along with me. You probably have somebody in your history that's alcoholic or whatnot. That's the only requirement. So I went to that meeting and a lady came up to me afterward and she said, my husband used to be a counselor. And he's a 12-step person. I didn't know what the 12 steps were. So that didn't matter to me. She said, let me see if he would be available to counsel you. And he started counseling me once a week. And he's the one that said, you know, I think Overeaters Anonymous might be a better program for you. I'm not. Okay. I was just willing. I was so depressed. I was like suicidally depressed, gaining weight, not understanding why I was depressed. I loved my husband. I loved my three children, but I was. And so part of, you know, the postpartum plus eating so much sugar is a depressant. And so, you know, they all just kind of went hand in hand without me knowing it. And I started going to OA, and I tell you, I sat in the back. One lady, she came up to me almost every week, and she'd compliment me on what I had on. And I was wearing my mother's, like, I don't know, Alfred Dunner's, these matching outfits with the elastic waist and the pants, because I was going ready to go into a size 18. And I was going to be bigger than my mom. And it was like, what the heck is going on? And so I'd sit there and the lady would compliment me on how nice I looked, all matchy and everything. And I was thinking, oh gosh, I wish I didn't have to wear my mother's clothes. But they loved me unconditionally. And I, other than the God of my understanding, I never felt loved unconditionally in my life. I always felt like if I jumped a little higher, if I got straight A's, if only, you know, I would be acceptable. To my parents, to the teachers, to my employer, you know, it was like that whole not good enough thing. I never felt good enough. It was like, I felt like every time I get this high, the bar would get raised, and then I'd have to go higher and higher. And the perfectionist thing was a real issue for me all those years. Where was I here? This is the other issue in my 60s. I'm in OA, and I decide I'm going to work those 12 steps perfectly. I'm going to read that 12 and 12, and I'm going to do those 12 steps by myself, and I'll show them how good I am at accomplishing things. So I did. I did the whole book in a year. I did all the writing and everything. Gave it away to my counselor, not anybody in the program. I wouldn't want you to know the real me. You probably wouldn't like me, you know, probably kick me out or something. And I was so proud of myself, you know. That same year, I also I was always a high achiever. So I had raised to this level in whatever I was selling at the time. I can't remember. I sold three different things in my life that I did really well at. Did the 12 and 12, achieved this level, won the trip, you know, yeah, I'm just flying high, right? On that trip, I got to eat at the head table, and the people around me are having these foo-foo drinks, right? Well, I don't eat sugar anymore. I don't eat sugar. That whole year, I didn't eat sugar, right? Well, the foo-foo drink, I thought, well, they're all having one. I'll have one. I am telling you, I had no idea about that allergy of the body and the craving that would be set up when I ingested that sugar. I drank that sugar, and I came home from that conference addicted again to sugar, but like a crazed person. And I crashed big time. I mean, crashed. Ended up in the hospital. I mean, I crashed. I literally emotionally crashed. Took in my daily planner with me. The doctor said, can I see it? And almost every hour was filled in with something that I was doing. You know, the perfectionism, the overachiever was just going crazy in me. And why is that? Because it didn't work, because this is what? A we program, not a me program. I had done my whole life the me program. Just tell me what to do and I will do it. And for the most part, you know, I was a high achiever, but I never liked myself. It didn't matter. I never liked myself because I was a chameleon. If you wanted me to do something, you know, I'd figure out how to do it, and I'd do exactly what you wanted. And then I'd go home and I'd just look in the mirror and think, who are you? Who are you? I don't even know who you are. I don't even know who you are. Over and over in program, I worked a good program after that. I got a sponsor and I worked the program. And whatever she said, I did. And I learned about service. So I started doing small things, going early and setting up chairs. We had drinks. We had coffee and tea at that one. I'd go early and set up the coffee and tea. I'd stay after and help put the books away. Eventually, I gave a lead and I had everything. Everything was written out. And I just stood there like this at the podium and read it, shaking, literally shaking. And I learned how to speak in OA. I learned how to speak. I learned how to love myself enough to say, you know what? This is my life. This is my story. I'm sharing it with you. I'm sharing my life with you. And you know what? It's okay if you don't like me or you don't like parts of my story or whatever. That's okay. But I hope there's something that you can take from me, you know, that maybe you didn't know before, or maybe it'll help you or make you think something that you haven't thought. But if not, that's okay. I never felt that way before. I never felt that it would be okay to be me in front of a bunch of people. I didn't think I could take the rejection. You know, I thought, what if they reject me? I thought I'd crawl in a hole and never come out again. You know, that was the feeling. I do not feel that way today. I have gotten so much strength and recovery in this program. It's mind blowing. All right. I don't want to spend any more on the past. Other than to say I had a lot of trauma in my childhood that was never dealt with. You know, it was always swept under the rug, swept under the rug, swept under the rug. And I think that that tied in with my addiction to sugar too, because sugar gave me a sense of peace and comfort, like a hug. You know, I always felt like I was being hugged if I could eat a bag of this or a few bars of this or a sleeve of this or whatever it was. As I worked on the program of recovery and I got abstinent, and I was doing service, I did service at different levels. So I started out just at the, you know, at the main group level. And then things started happening kind of all at once for me. I had a sponsor that said, you know, you have a lot to give. You've been given a lot. You have a lot you can give back to OA. Have you ever considered getting involved, not at the region level? Oh, sorry, my mind is not what it used to be. I'll tell you that. At the well, anyway, at the region, I was in region 5. So I became a rep for my group and then kind of tried all the other service positions in there. And then, you know, did those. And then I also, after I'd been there, got to go to the World Service Business Conference. I am telling you, if you haven't experienced any type of volunteering other than at group level, if you get the opportunity to do anything with region and then moving on to the World Service Business, it's a whole different ball game. And the recovery, it's like you're in a room just full of recovered people. And it is amazing. I mean, it's amazing. You learn so much from those people.
So I'm doing that. I'm doing all that, going to World Service. I think I went 3 years in a row.
During that time, I had a middle son that struggled with addiction, drug addiction. For 12 years, he struggled with drug addiction. And we did, I can't tell you how much we did to try to help him, help himself. I even went back to college and became an alcohol and drug counselor because I wanted to understand it at as deep a level as I possibly could. A year, let's see, it was 2016. All of a sudden, I had the second spiritual awakening of my life. And I tell you, I wasn't seeking it. I had gained, I had left program. I had gained for about 9 months. My son was in this addiction and it rocked our whole family. It was very, very, very difficult. And I gained all my weight back. And then I thought, I was seeing a chiropractor that was also a naturopath. And I said, I need help. I need help. I'm gaining weight. I feel terrible. My latest health checkup, the blood work was way off. Can you help me? And he said, if you're willing to eat the way that I suggest, I can help you. I'm like, eat the way you suggest. I trusted him because he worked for me as a chiropractor. I had a terrible back. And I said, okay. I surrendered. He developed a plan of eating for me. I was willing to do it. At the same time, I decided I'm going to start reading the big book from cover to cover. And what did the first page say? There are hundreds or thousands of men and women who have recovered. Recovered. And I thought, I don't ever remember hearing that before, that I could actually be recovered. I thought it was always like either in recovery or, you know, working toward recovery or something, but I could be recovered. Okay, that I started chewing on that, recovered. Okay, then I went to a meeting and there was a speaker and he said, hello, I'm blah, 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 a recovered compulsive overeater. And I'm like, what? Somebody else is saying that. And then somebody told me about a phone meeting and I went on that and everybody there was saying recovered compulsive overeater. And it was a spiritual awakening for me. Everything kind of came in together. I was willing to eat differently. I saw myself differently. I worked the program, you know, like my hair was on fire. That's one of the things I've heard. It was like, whatever I have to do, I want recovery. And oh my goodness, the gift was amazing. Where it says in there that, it'll be removed. I mean, it's almost 8 years now, the desire to eat any of those binge foods, any of those sugary foods has been totally removed. Zippo. I have zero desire to eat any of that. That is a miracle of the program. It is a promise of the program. When you read that, it is possible for every single one of us. It's not just for me. It's in the big book. So it's for all of us. A year after I got this solid recovery, our son died of an overdose. If you've never had a child die, I hope you never do. But I stayed abstinent through that. And if I can stay abstinent through that, I felt like God was showing me, he was with me, and I felt those feelings. I felt those feelings. It took 2 years of feeling them daily to feel like I was even going to make it, to be honest. But I did. By the grace of God, here I am today. And a lot's happened since then, too. And what I found is I've worked the program. And whenever I have something else that comes up in my life where I feel resentful or fearful, I work the program. Just last week, I did a resentment. I had a resentment on a relative. I won't say any more than that, but I was like, I want to be at peace. I want to be, happy, joyous, and free, which I am for the most part. But, you know, it's life. Things come up. Things happen. But I have a program. So I plug it into the program. I'm powerless over the choices that this person makes, right? My life has become unmanageable. But I believe there is a power greater than me that can restore me to sanity. And so I do a fourth step on that person. And then I still have those angsty feelings. So I pray for that person for 6 days. I put that person, what I want for that person, in my God box. I talk about it with my sponsor. I deal with the situation because I want to be free of any resentments, of any fears. And it's possible one moment at a time, one day at a time. You know, I used to think it's possible for some people, but not me. No, it's possible for every single one of us. So please, if you hear anything at all tonight, please hear that the promises of the big book are there for each and every one of us. Now we have to do the footwork. My phone or something's talking to me. Oh, it's my watch. My kids got me this watch and I don't even know what to do with it. I just like a regular watch, but it talks to me sometimes. Sorry. It's contingent, right? Our daily reprieve is contingent on our footwork. I believe the God of my understanding meets me halfway. We walk hand in hand. We skip, we laugh, we sing, we cry, we do things together. But I've got to go to my meetings. I have to have a sponsor. I sponsor others. I read literature daily. I read the two daily readers every morning. Plus, I go through the big book with my sponsees. Then I go through the 12 and 12. Then we read other OA books after that. I pray and meditate daily. I didn't do meditation until about 7 years ago. Again, when that huge thing happened for me, I started meditating. And if you haven't done that, you know, I go on YouTube and there are some guided ones, just a short guided one if you've never done it. But what it did, it helped me get the crazy monkeys out of my mind. I mean, for my mind to actually be clear and, you know, be still and know that I am God, I could be still and hear God even clearer. I mean, it was amazing. So every morning, not every, I shouldn't say every, you know, always every, that doesn't, yeah. The majority of mornings, I meditate, and it helps my day start off so peaceful. I love meditating. Also, something I do throughout the day, and this is a tool that I use that I keep in my pocket all the time, the pause. Whenever I'm irritated, it could be anything. It could be at driving, you know, it could be standing in the line at the grocery store, and the clerk is, and I'm in Tennessee, you know, it's pretty laid back here. So they might want to sit there and talk, and I've got frozen things in my cart that are thawing, you know? So it's like, pause, pause, you know, I'm powerless over what other people do. So it helps me to slow my thinking down, to keep the anger, you know, at bay. Pause is a huge one for me. Of course, service, you know, the meetings, local, region. I don't do region anymore since I moved to Tennessee. When I was in the Chicagoland area, I was very involved in OA. Currently though, I mean, I do work at my meetings that I go to, but that's the only level. Something else I think about each day when I wake up is I say, you know what, Sandy, you have been given the gift of another day. You've been given the gift of another day, and it is a gift. Okay. You get to choose life today or death. It's your choice. Life or death. What are you going to do? You're going to live your life, or are you going to stay inside and be depressed and whatever, you know? Majority of days I choose to live my life. And it's been an extremely difficult year. Again, this year has been probably the most difficult of my life when you put all the different things together. And you know, I share these things with you to tell you that no matter what happens in your life, no matter what happens, abstinence is possible. This year, January 29th, my husband got diagnosed with AML, acute myeloid leukemia. And we lived in Nashville for off and on for about 3 months, in and out of the hospital, in and out of treatments, you know, chemo and whatnot. And he passed away May 10th of this year. We just retired 3 years ago and moved to Tennessee. And I'm extremely grateful he got to enjoy Tennessee for that time, because he's the one that wanted to move here, and he was a golfer, and he got to golf and just, I mean, he was in his glory those years that he was here. And I'm very, very grateful for that. Also lost a dear friend from program, 30 years, a good friend from program. And we did everything together in program. We did meetings. We did spiritual readings, you know, in a book study together regularly. It was very difficult losing him this past year. Lost my dog of 14 years a couple of months ago. Lost my brother to a car accident. Lost another dear OA friend a couple of weeks ago. And I went to her funeral last week out of state. And I'm abstinent. I'm abstinent. By the grace of God, go I. I work a good program. And if you are not sponsoring and you have recovery under your belt, I'm going to challenge you to be sponsoring, because I get more out of sponsoring than I give. I know that. I know that. I mean, I pretty much listen, and you know, I can share my experience, strength, and hope. But one thing I know, until you're ready to work the program, until you're ready to make the hard decisions of, I don't even do yellow. What are yellow light foods? Come on. I'm sorry. The light is red or green, right? Because if I go to a yellow light, I can hold back or I can zip right through it. And I look at yellow light foods as, what the heck? I've got a lead foot. I'm flying through there. I'm getting what I want and, you know, moving on. No, no yellow light foods for me. I have a red list and a green list. And it's shifted over the years. I'll say that there's more foods on my red list than there used to be, because I've been able to become more honest with my foods. And, you know, I love the way I eat. I just shifted some food again last week, but I was honest about what I was eating. And I said, you know what? I'm starting to feel like I might want to eat more after I eat this. And, you know, I talked about it and I went, you know what? Not worth it. Take it out. Take it out, you know? So, program of honesty, absolutely. You've got to be honest with yourself, or it's not going to work, you know? Got to be honest with yourself. Hopefully you've got a sponsor and your sponsor has a sponsor, you know, that's working a program. Maybe you become friends, you become close with your sponsor, but keep that core sponsor, you know, sponsee relationship, because that's what's going to support you. I'm trying to think what else I can say. I just continually work through the steps. I'm always, you know, doing, I have the, I don't know if, let me make sure I say the right name. The OA toolkit. I don't know if any of you have that or not, but you know, I mean, I don't like to really count my days in that. I mean, yes, I've been abstinent, but I mean, I can tell you I've been abstinent 7 years, 7.86 years. This tells you everything you would ever want to know about your abstinence. But it also, what I like about it is it has tools in it. So I can do a spot check. I can do a nightly inventory, a step 10 on this, and I send it to my sponsor. I can do a food journal and a gratitude list. So if you don't have this, my OA toolkit. It's a little tiny orange circle around it, if you can see it. That's what it looks like. Very, very helpful for me. Otherwise, I don't know. I work my program to the best of my ability. If I'm asked to speak, I said early on, if I'm ever asked to speak, you know, unless I've got something else scheduled, I'll just say yes. So I said yes to this. And I think really, Joe, I don't know what else I can say. I mean, I could go blah, blah, blah. But if anybody has any questions or however else you do this, I'm happy to say thank you for now and pass.
Thank you very much, Sandy. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Do we have anybody that has questions for Sandy? Please raise your, yes, Jessamy.
There we go.
Sandy, thank you so much. That was incredible. I relate a lot to the chameleon concept and everything around that you shared. My question was, you mentioned kind of how ambitious and driven you were as a kid, but then also professionally. How did you use program to really work at sort of being more balanced in your work environment and making that sustainable so that it didn't, you know, jeopardize your recovery?
Right. I did start seeing a counselor, so that was helpful. Working through the steps, and my, I mean, one of my character defects was the perfectionism. So I started working with my sponsor on that as well. And that was just, I put that right through the steps. And the only thing I could do is, you know, ask God, you know, to help me be aware of it. So when I was doing something where I was, you know, the whole perfection thing, I mean, I remember this was eons ago, but the counselor said, you know what? I want you to purposely spill a glass of milk at the dinner table. I'm like, what? I'd have to clean it up. I'm not going to do that. And he said, yeah, you are. That's your assignment for this week, you know? So, but it was to show the kids that their mom wasn't so darn perfect either. Moms can knock over a glass of milk, you know? And did the world come to an end? Absolutely not. So that was one of the things I would have to say to myself that helped me a lot. In the big picture, Sandy, does this matter? Is this going to matter tomorrow, next week, in the big picture? And so that's something I do a lot, is pull back and take a look at it and say, in the big picture, you know, what?
Thank you.
Anyone else?
Hi, my name is Stella. Thank you so much, Sandy. That was awesome. I just related to so many things. My problem is, and I know I stayed away from candy one time for 5 years, and then I was at a Christmas party. My nephew offered me this homemade candy, and I said, no, no, no. And he didn't force me, but it felt like he did, and I took it, and I've never quit eating it since. But, like, what's hard is, like, I love food. I just love to eat. And you have to limit yourself. That's where I have a problem. How do you, like, limit yourself when you're eating dinner? I mean, I could see, well, okay, cut out my sweets. And I do that sometimes for a week or two or three, and then I go back. But, like, how do you limit yourself when you have to eat food and you're an overeater at the table? How do you deal with that?
Thank you. Thanks for the question. When I first started working with the naturopath, he also had me weighing and measuring my food. And I was willing, because I said I'd be willing to do what he said. And I had never weighed and measured my food before. So, I mean, to see what a normal size, you know, serving was kind of mind boggling to me. So now this is years later, and I pretty much use the size of my fist now. I don't weigh and measure, but I kind of look on my plate. Here's my protein. Here's my healthy carb. Here's my vegetable. And then I have a small bowl that has fruit in it. So I can do that now. But initially I did weigh and measure to get a clear picture in my mind, and then just ask God, please, God, help me be abstinent today. I'm willing to eat what's healthy for me to eat. Help me do that. Because I'm powerless. I'd want to eat, you know, twice as much. But your stomach shrinks, too. The longer you eat healthy, your body adjusts. And as long as I don't feed the craving, as long as I'm feeding my body healthy food, like it's like a well-oiled machine, you know. I just keep putting the right thing in it, and it keeps working and doing it the right way. I just can't put water in where there's oil. I can't put sugar in where it doesn't belong for me.